And now I put, I did the first three steps, yes, okay. You just did that. So, we met our total power without your help, but as ourselves, we know. And our lives fall from this. And we come to believe now that you can and will restore us to the deeper degree of sanity, of harmony, and order and peace. In every affair of our lives, we ask, Father, that we be restored to our oneness with you, to your and our in our lives. And the meditation now, Father, we give you our will, our self-will, our self-control, and we give you our life, every area of our life. We give you, our thoughts and our desires, our family, our friends, our office. We offer ourselves to you, to build with us and do with us as you will. We give us an abundance of self, so that we may better do your will and take away our difficulties, our selfishness, our self-centeredness, our self-seeking, so that victory over time may better win to those with us on your power and your love and your will. May we do your will always. And so it is.
Amen. But we don't serve it. And after the meeting, be sure you do this. Holder's been in the A longer than God. I'm sorry. Holder's been over about as long as I've been over now. I say, Burke, five years.
Oh, yeah.
And he says over again about 18.
Right.
He's been in the A longer than about 100 years. I've been a single
listener.
Holder, I just said, don't get fuzzy. Holder, Marshall, and I just said, two things. And tried to think of all the different states of meeting. Remember when, and even all the options, and the rest goes on and on and on, over 20 years here. Homer, no, really, you left over. He's part of that. And another thing that I remember, Homer, like, ankle, got down, just something else. But one time, there were about 12 people that were at a hotel in the convention. And it by happenstance, partially and partially because people over the years, but by under 7 o'clock, because there were 12 men, all men in this room, all members of the egg. And I had at that time, about the least time, so I had to go in the room. I must have had 15 years, just 39 years, and other people had done that. And we got to talk to our old friends, the Lesson Academy's on the ticket. Between the 10 or 12 of the men there, all of them having as much or more sobriety as that. Collectively, we could not remember three people who had as much as 5 years of age sobriety and got drunk who were still alive. Out of 300 or 400 years of practice sobriety, all of us together did not know three people on a first-hand basis or knew someone else that knew of, yes, who had as much as 5 years of age sobriety. And started drinking for some time. It took me quite a while to get that all figured out. And one of the things that I was talking to my man that I needed on a daily basis to do the things necessary so that I could continue in my sobriety, because my chances of dying sober were practically nil if I drank it. And I'm looking at it. Remember that? Okay. Today we're on tab 4, 5, 6, and 7. And we're going to cross that over. We're going to try our best not to deliver any one part. Three British we keep on. And also at the end of that order is there, I'm trying to be about every food we have a problem. This is B.A.A. book that really made it. It really does. And it has some good advice. And you can tell them too. And it has special powers. And if you don't have a big book about Paulus Anonymous, it has these attributes of his character, you might get it out of you to know. Because you might perish with the one you got. This is my favorite egg birthday. You all know whatever you like to come up on the ground. I'll put your name right in it. Okay? The famous Poland name with that. Therefore, we are searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Marshalling is about the best at 40% working the explanation of it other than the kind of AAR on that. And certainly her and reading, I think it was surprised what I have much know about it. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. This is my contribution to the 4th that I'll make it for. written inventory, and I think we will be later in the point with this particular picture. If we go into a lengthy discussion, why is that necessary?
Right.
I really think we need to laugh because all the people here, but the evidence that you know to have these are vested in this type of study, and I'm not even later on that. We will make a searching and fearless written moral inventory. Okay. It has been enough in the past, and for most of us, to say that we did that thing, you know, and then at a later date, we make this step, and then we did ourselves of the guilt of what we've done, and we've gone to that section of the run of the planet. It's been so forcefully brought to my attention that I need to know more about myself than the remembrance of doing a certain thing, okay? So, today, in a four-step inventory, it goes something like this. On July the 15th, 1967, I robbed a filling station on the corner of 3rd and 100th Street. You know, that's really why he robbed it, I did. And I explored that and made that. Now, it's going to be the hard part. After I have this on paper, and I recognize everybody is, now I get another piece of paper, but it still has to do with the filling station on the corner of 3rd and 100th, and what is called his location. And I need a trip into my past, an exploratory trip, so that I can determine what motivated me to rob the police station on the part of 3900 in July of 1967. And I might add that it was because I wanted to be a part of a certain thing, a interior to the situation that I was caught in, which is a gang of boys, okay? Or girls doing something that they know they shouldn't be doing, but are so bad to be a part of that they go ahead and say, okay, and whatever kind of situation it is. But I need to know what motivated me to rob the police station. Possibly it was because I was totally advanced in society at large, and I wanted to strike out individually with them for the sorry state of my affairs that was involved. So the closest thing to him and the easiest thing to do is appear that I wouldn't be called to consider it as my body's decision. Or was it because, frankly, because of the terrorism work? You know, that was the easiest way that I knew to get my hands on money. And I said, I just wanted money and I robbed the service station. But the thing that's important to know is what my motivation was. What prompted me to rob the service station for a quarter of 30 pounds of traffic. And you see, I've never come to the motivating factor until I start at that point in time and trace myself back. And now we find out what we're doing. If you want to find out your problem today, start on the basis of looking at these things that previously caused us trouble and find out what motivated us to do it. Okay, now you've got a page. That's not necessary in the page. I'm going to use that for illustration. We've got a page that talks about the search station, and now we've got a page in which we investigate the relationship we have with the circumstances so we can find out what motivated us to rob the search station. Now we're ready for page 3. All about the search station. How did we react to robbing the search station? On the card, $3 in 1967. What, did I become paralyzed with fear of being found out? Or possibly, my attitude was so fine, you know, that I dared those people to even try to investigate and find out who robbed the service station. And then I later come to mind that after this unbelievable thing that I had done, and the principles that I had laid by hand in order to be a part of a certain group of boys, or in, and the things I found in my life, did I find that I made push-ups, it was too late, you know, and I didn't regret that. After I'd done it, they didn't seem to recognize how much I'd been up. And then I can resent the very people, you know, that's what actually wanted to be part of, or not even fear. Very possibly, one could find that the success of robbing the search station. If you were caught up and asked you about that, the only thing you think of is the easiest thing, you know, I can't believe how easy this was to make that second bus, how I'm going to make a career out of this. You know, whatever your reaction was, we really need to understand. Okay. When it comes to an understanding, based on what we did, two factors, three, one more time, what motivated us, but after the act, how did you react to it? I believe that we come to the first real understanding of what we have been, and then this is the method that's necessary right away to reach the place. And under these conditions, we can lose a job that is associated with all of the things right there. Again, a labor, except 6 and 7, having to do about the choices that we had, whether we bought a service agent or whatever else it was. And I'm jumping the gun. I hope I remember to do this. It all based on most of the best again, what we got to do with the time of day. And, okay, I'm going to pause and go ahead and pause that. Before you go in.
Okay.
Before all that, show perfection. Does anyone have anything? And we'll come back again with opportunity. Right now, does anyone have anything to comment on about that portion first step? Right there? Okay.
I discovered many ways in here to the step, and it depends on where a person is, what they need. It's okay to do it anyway that works for you. And sometimes you do it one way, and sometimes you do it another way. One of the things I discovered is changing all in one. I thought that I was going to. It took me so long to finally pick up the pen and the paper and start. And I thought, I'm going to do it honestly and thoroughly and searching them. I'm going to do the best job that anybody's ever done. I'm going to have to do it again, but you know, that was a deal. So I didn't more than get through with it and breathe back, breathe. And then I heard this guy call Mark Ball about he's like, he's taking him forward, and that's what's happening. I didn't think I would ever have to do that again. I just did, and it was so short, and I just, I was through. I was so delighted. It wasn't my skill to kill him in my life. And I started talking about it. I said, believe it. I just said, believe it. I went up to him, and I said, why do you have to keep on doing this? And he said, you do it until you're free of it. And I heard him. And, I do not like some things I heard, but I had to accept it as true for me. But I'm getting to different ways that I have discovered. You can start right where you are. You don't have to, you know, go back to the beginning of your life. If you're having
problems that you're really hurting, then just write down in the door of what's happening to you and how you're feeling right now. And then maybe that frees you up. Now, that's where I start. That frees you up. Now, then you can go out and start at the beginning of life. Now, that's where you're going to do a whole life inventory. And far to do it that way. And this is, I think, and probably because it's the way I did. I read first everything in the online literature and everything in the A literature. And underlined and marked. And then I've got me some guides for forcing inventories. But for me, to begin with, when I did one, I needed more specific directions than big baby not to do it that way. And in fact, I did three ways. One time, another for every mistake, you imagine all that stuff, I was getting stored up in me. No wonder I got pressed and had to put it up to get it and go do something else for a while. But the first way I did was that I got in a book and I divided my life in experts from 1 to 6, from 6 to my junior high years, and then my high school years, then my college years, and then my married years, and then the years of children. And I made headings. And then I started the prayer and asked God's help to reveal to me anything that wasn't healing me that I needed to know and needed to heal, needed to look at. And then I would just turn to that section and start writing. The reason for the section is you have a little order. And I had so many things come to my mind, but that's not, you know, where I was, so I didn't write up that. And then I forget it. I also carried the little pocket notebook by that size in my purse. And when I was busy during the day and didn't have time to write on it, I would make notes in my little pocket notebook, just enough to jog my memory to go back and put that down in the right section. You know, there have been some people that say that the big book doesn't say you tell all of your life story. But it really does. And I'll tell you where it is. Because when you start doing it this way, you get some controversy. So on page 73, it says, "But they have not learned of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in a sense we find it necessary until they tell someone else all their life story." So it does say that.
That's the verse that says, "We start at the very beginning." Okay. The very beginning for me, and I think for you, is my first consciousness. That's another game that I can share. You know, I've had another game, but I don't know that. But my consciousness, I started at the very beginning. That's what I said, but, you know.
One of the reasons for doing this, but I know today that I didn't know back then, that you start at the very beginning. I ask a silly question, but, you know, I didn't know, so I asked it. Well, do I start writing my inventory when I start living as an alcoholic?
And
they said, and my own last said, no, you better start at the beginning. And, but, you know, most of, we're all, we've already reacted to things, and we already have all sorts of things going on inside of us by the time we're 6 years old. So many things are setting us at a very early age, and those patterns are set, and we live them out time and time again in our life. And so what we want to try to do is to get to the underlying causes, to see the patterns in our life that we repeat and repeat and repeat time and time again. So how are you going to do that? Let's start at the very beginning. When I started, I got to the section about, from 1 to 6, I sat there and thought, man, nothing happened. So I did my dispersion, sort of like I was writing a letter to God. And I just said, well, God, I don't get anything. Very important happened to me from age 1 to 6 because I don't remember anything. And just since I said, I don't remember anything, I remember them. And it seemed a very incidental thing, but it turned out to be very significant in my life. Two things in my early childhood that were very significant. One came out in one inventory, just one came out in another. I didn't give up the same night. The thing that came out in person was I remember being called down by my grandfather. I was about 2.5 years old. I was playing in a water pump, you know, with a free drink water, and I was all porch. And I was just having fun playing in the water right out, you know, on porch. And my grandfather really looked, stomped his foot, and, you know, not any way to be able to take a bath out, and just said, Marceline, put it in that water. But what happened to me inside, it took a half hour of all, you know, as a grown person, and I looked at it. And my reaction to it was that I didn't want him telling me what to do. I wanted to be my own boss, and I don't want anybody telling me what to do. And the next thing was, I will get into him. I will find something that he's doing and call him out. And I was having a good time that morning. And what he said to me, I wasn't having a good time anymore. I had to stop my son and watch him. And I remember taking off, you know, several hours in his room and watching him. And I just had to find something that I called him down about. And finally, he came up getting water, and he accidentally spilled a little bit, and it just spilled me to death. And I stopped my foot and said, hey, quit doing that water. And you know, I got out of it, he called that off his tooth. It's a for you, though. But I really did get out of it, because this said a pattern, you know. And I saw that I had repeated and repeated and repeated. Oops. Well, I guess that just did it with both of those. I don't get the other thing that happened in early childhood, that, and I was doing this, I was going to a home in Houston, Los Angeles, as a great teacher in LA. And I learned much from her. And, she said, and I'll be quoting her using some of her stuff in the fourth and fifth day. She said, you know, to start with prayer and to ask any God to reveal to you anything that's not humanity, and then whatever comes to your consciousness, then you start talking about that or writing about that. Well, I'm her. And that came to my mind, and I said, why, that's ridiculous. I haven't thought about that in years. So there's no need in even bringing that up. And she said, listen, you just ask God to reveal to you anything that was not humanity. Now, I don't know what it was. It wasn't me, that's my because I thought, you know, that I was. And I thought that other guy was the one that had done it to me. But it's what I had done to myself and my reaction to it. I need to look at it. I was in first grade in school, and I was called into the principal's office and given a whipping for writing a dirty word in the girl's bathroom. And I didn't even know what the word meant. And I didn't even know what he was talking about. And I tried to tell him, and he didn't pay attention to me. And he said, well, you go over and look at it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And he didn't. And the word was really hard to say all of my life. I could hardly get it out, and it was F-U-C-K. And I was just so long every time I said it, and I just get cold chills. And I didn't know until years after the program how I was reacting to this thing. I just really don't know. And I remember walking home that day and thinking, well, I'll tell my mother, and she'll help me with this, and she'll get fixed. Well, I went home and tried to tell my mother, and she was busy, and she was looking sober. And, you know, she wasn't very concerned about me and putting a school for something that I didn't do. And I remember then my feeling of loneliness sitting. And I thought, there's nobody to talk to, there's nobody to understand. And that started right then, at 6 years old. And I remember again, the parents already said, I'm going to be with him. And you can imagine, 6 years old, he was the superintendent of the school. But I carried that inside me. Probably very fortunately for me, I was transferred in good place from that situation in a year or two. And really forgot. And it had not really concerned me. But when she was helping me with my inventory, and we got off food, she said, okay, let's look at see if we can find a pattern in your life. And she said, let me ask you a question. Haven't you always felt like that you have been put upon by men? And I said, I sure have. My father was not hard, my husband was not hard. And she said, do you see it started right back there with the principal? So that's good. And then she also helped me then just get into a little bit of the success, because she helped me make a list of people I'd harmed. And she had me put his name on the list. And I said, now wait just a minute. He harmed me. I did not harm him. And she said, oh, yes, you did. And I said, how? And she said, you have been carrying unpleasant thoughts against that man all your life. And you have to become a little. To convince that man. That's what I said about the first face that she had to put in. And I was horrified. I just could not imagine me doing that. But I put his name down, and in time, I did find him. Come right. Now, don't listen, I never really looked up. But it's an inside job, and that had it here. But for me to look at that particular thing and see how that had controlled my life to such a degree that it was making any decisions that we made with healing stay with us. All our until we left and decide, I don't have control anymore. That is absolutely ridiculous. But how are we going to know the decisions that we made with healing unless we go back and search and look? You know, we're doing this for ourselves to get better. And when you look at the fourth step that way, now I look at that way, but I'm now looking back, I know that I, this was what I had to do. And I was doing it for me. I was doing it for everybody else. They hope they say you ought to do it. We have to do this for ourselves. And it's a very, very necessary thing to do. One cannot talk about building forces. And she said, when we get in trouble, we have misused the motivated forces. Then they're unbalanced and misdirected, effective and excessive. Each one of the forces already used for two purposes, that God may be glorified and to help our fellow man. This is our true purpose for being here. And the motivating forces are knowledge, society, power, superiority, and affection. And affection is love. And I think superiority is self-explanatory. And power means, the example I have here is the talent that we have in our life that we can use for selfish reasons or to hurt another instead of helping glorify God and further flush along. And society, the issues that is using evil, excessive pressure, and seeking to bypass God and lose our identity. And knowledge that we have, we can misuse that in, against another person, or used in the wrong direction. Any relationship that bypasses God is not a love relationship. We need to ask ourselves, how and where have we misused love? How have we misused our knowledge? How and where have the inner instincts warped us? This is what we want to reposition to help us correct. And we say we're guilty of this fact, but we need to examine ourselves and the cause behind it and get to the exact nature of it. I have a couple things down here that were meaningful to me. One of the questions that I think you need to ask yourself is, am I living with unresolved discontent? And that can really warp your life. It can really get you messed up. If you've done four steps, you're going to do another one. I'm going to get into that in a minute too. Establish your relationship with God and be sure that that's right. And then let God take you through and reveal the things in your four steps that you need to look at. This is a new aspect on guilt. Did you know how much pride has to do with it? Dr. Joe Kelly said, guilt, the inadequacies of a pretentious woman. Now here's something else I wrote down. Pride and ego are the anesthetics that end the pain of stupidity. That's not hurting. Pride and ego are the anesthetics that end the pain of stupidity. Have you heard about the three S's? I'll talk about those, and that's in the first page of the 2012 of Basketball. And it's talking about these desires for the sex relation, for material and emotional security, and for companionship are perfectly necessary and right, and sure we got to it, but if we misuse that thing, we have a balance and improv. And sometimes those are referred to as the three S's, and sometimes they substitute society for companionship. And the motivated forces in, well, they are, they're tiny. She finds them the way out of you. And she helps you with the inventory, which is tremendous. She has a sheet of paper divided in three lines. And she has a misuse of motivating force, and she gets you to look at the things that you have done. And if you can't figure it out, she tells you what motivating force you have misused in this act that you have done. And then the next line is the column where she puts those you have harmed. And that's a list. No, I'm going to get my that. The next column is she entitles it the defect of character that she sees in the act that you have told her about. and that's slavery system. And then the last column is supposed to be at home. That's slavery right there. And she had that get better than I've ever known. And I just wish that, you know, that I could do that. I'm able to write that figure out. There are a number of, I'm going to tell you how to reinventory first, though. When you have, when you're just ready to do another inventory, and you don't have a specific, you know, you can also do one on an inventory on marriage, or on your job, or on rough friendship, or you can do one on a particular thing. But then when the time comes to the inventory, maybe once a year, twice a year, then the best way that I have found to do that is to draw a circle and put it about in the middle and divide it up like a piece of pie. And these are the different compartments of your life. And whatever makes up your life, you know, if you're married, your family, relationship, your husband, relationship with your children, maybe your in-laws, your work, then your job, and they are all in your life. Everything that you can think of that makes up your life, you name in the circle. And then, again, you put eggs at the top of the face, and then again you sit down and ask for God's guidance and help, and for him to show you anything that you need to see from. And then you write in your heart where you want to, and you look at that area of your life, and you see, you evaluate, and you see, how am I doing in this area? And you have something to compare to. Am I better? I get one having to say that is when I wrote my seminar. If you look back enough to see, if you have progressed. If you have progressed, well, then you might think of some things that, that you want to do to make that area better in your life. Sometimes you will find an area that you have risked on down in and you walk around, and this lets you know where you need to work. Another thing that I don't know if I picked it up, but it's a great dream, and I try to always remember to have people do this when they're doing inventory, is when you get food, write out or check the three worst things that you've ever done that have bugged you and bothered you most. And it is amazing that probably from your biggest success will agree with you. So you can see what you do yourself by the other material you carry. Also, remember your three main defects of character. And this is a great thing to use to check yourself for doing an inventory. The first time I did an inventory, my three main defects were resentment, fear, and self-pity. And then as I did inventories for years, you know, they got better, like intolerance and patience, some of the minor things that you can live with a little bit. And then I got in trouble again, and I did another inventory, and that's what my three main defects were. Resentment. And that was a big way, the one time for me that I was really in trouble. And I guarantee you, I would know as quickly to get to work again if I hadn't been doing it that way. And I think that's really a real help to remember to do that. The principle, there are promises to the step forward. And I think that you might be going over too much to get into promises. But the principles that I found is that forward, courage, honesty, action, and hope. I'm not sure as I say everything that needs to be said, but I would like to ask you any questions or any comments.
The headings
are like I told you to look at the different areas of your life. So one of the headings would be my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my children would be maybe another heading, your job, all of these things that make up your life would be a different heading. Well, for the first inventory, I did, you could, but I did this, my life story.
Most days I've ever seen your first inventory, you started at the very beginning, right, and actually, that's the easier one.
They handle that.
They handle it. Establish the pattern as quickly as possible, and then as in the repetition of the same thing. You say, well, we found next to that, so on the practice pattern says.
Yeah, I always tell person to write down, there's a lot of things don't need to write down, that have no importance, but write down the things that hurt you, the things that you thought you never would be able to forgive or forget, the things that were traumatic in your life. I remember my father having a nightmare when I was a child, and he was pretty loud. And this, I didn't see this for years, but that really did affect me. Because here was this father that was so afraid of a little mouse, you know, that I didn't have anything to do with him. Yeah. And now, see, that was just something I used to look at. But it did affect me. See, it really did affect me. The things affect you. And particularly if you can find the things, the decisions that you made in your life with people. And one that I made, I am never going to get close to anybody again because I don't want to get hurt. And that's something I had to look at and face and deal with. And down my line, this program, because he did very well if you continue with that. So look at the things that you were positive and sure that this is what it's going to be, and you made it feel. And that's what you got to take. Some of them are probability, you'll keep some of them. They're voting.
Yeah.
If I listen a little bit,
okay.
Listen a little bit more
specifically. Knowledge, society, power, superiority, and affection. Another thing that you need to look at is, and ask yourself, see how you are manipulating people. You know, there's the manipulator and the manipulated, and there's the dominator and the dominated, and we go back and forth from one of those to the other, and check yourself and see. Quit roller playing. It takes two, you know. It takes two to play that game, and get on yourself, and you know, you can play it. It's amazing how they have to play too. And then they sit there in trouble, and it's always the pain, the necessary thing to look at for growth and development. I think it's a good time to stop. Our day stuff is there, right?
Let me give you a thought. How many people here? If you see a certain person who has represented himself to you, he or she, on first pass, if anybody ever had to say, I don't like him, and I don't trust it. Three names been in there, that's every guy I've ever seen. I didn't trust that fellow for the first time I ever saw him. One of the things that you can give up is that. In a 4-7 inventory, I promise you that you will discover these people you instantaneously don't like, or you just don't trust them. If you will keep going backwards in time, you will find, and usually, when you were 5, 6, 7, or 8 years old, there was a person who even physically resembles this broke sector people, who put you down when you were a little boy or a little girl. An old man with a mustache or something, you know. It was always criticized children. And if you were that kind of mustache, when you're 73 years old, if they fat woman that has a mustache walks around, you say, I'm not going to like her. And you have no idea of why you would like her. But if you go backwards in time, you will find that there is always a person who has put you down when you were a little boy or a little girl. And the mechanism clicks. And forever, and if you fix it, you're going to react to similar people. Now take that one case and on. And spread it in every area of your life. It's easier to understand the relationship when we have other people. Why you still like certain people, or why you're arguing with some bad person. And you see, nothing that we experience today is because of unity. It comes to a point of unity except our spiritual growth. That's not instant. It's only a repetitious thing that bounces along in our life. And it's rather than get better, it always gets worse, and there's only person. The only thing you, the only thing that we experience is you, is spiritual growth. All other things that happen to us human beings are repetitious. And they will slowly take us to our mental and emotional destruction, and there's stoppage. And it's through the recognition of the patterns that are established many, many years within our life and free. And that's what we experience in the 4-7.
I want to speak about one thing at the end of the 4-7 book that I found really interesting. Really, I found it. It says when the spiritual malady is overcome, we struggle not mentally and physically. We overcome. When we overcome our spiritual sickness, we can fix it inside, then mentally and physically. We struggle now. And there's another room. There's several responses of it, but there's two or three here that I've written mine. We have a meant to see the terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as people.
You know, the thing that I've been experiencing, the one thing that I had the most trouble tolerating in me is when you attack my self-esteem. And when that's in jeopardy, you're in trouble. When my self-esteem is in jeopardy, you're in trouble. Because I realize that's been my past experience. I hope I'm over with that. But what we need to remember is even a little child, you know, there's an encryption on our individual self-esteem. Partially, we did experience with the principal of the suit. At 6 years old, you know, her total thought process is, I don't get even with him, you know, his attack herself. I'm going to have to rearrange it. We're going to be on our schedule today. But we'll be here at midnight, and then, you know, start doing a little testing time. And how would you like to have him call me now? Okay, just have that healing break.
We go to step 5. There's one thing that I want to read that my friend Mary Lord gave me that I think is very good. These are 8 elements and negative patterns developed as an alcoholic for an addiction, but I think they're developing all of us. I think that we can exclude the alcoholic. First is depression, aggression, oppression, perfection, isolation, egocentricity, defiance, and woe and all. Depression, aggression, oppression, perfection, isolation, egocentricity, defiance, and woe and all. The 8 elements and negative patterns developed before and during addiction.
Step 5, admitted to ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, as another human being, the exact nature of our own. When we decide, in the capitalist, when we decide, which is in this case is when I decide, when I decide to steer my sword, to waste no time. These are not even, this could be classified as a subtle suggestion. So, this is so important. Very reaches a command. When I decide, my purpose is to make this. When I decide who is to hear my story. Now, carry a little member of the Thursday. Now, let's jump back in time and we can start just as we start seeing the interrelationship of one step to another. I have previously come to a judgment that I'm going to turn this deciding making in my life over to another decider. And this could be the very first illustration that we have of God speaking to us. Okay? I'm going to let my decider decide. And now I have. I'm operating on the basis of God is making my decisions rather than myself. When I decide who is to hear my story, I waste no time. Now that's the time to get involved in this step. Now this is plainly illustrated in this book where he said that. Then people are constantly bothered with questions like, well, when am I supposed to do this? And you know, it's already been given to us in the latest video. It really is all that even time schedule from here. Yeah. I waste no time. That is the time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for I am for a long talk. I explain to you this part what I'm about to do and why I have to do it. He's rise and engage upon a life and death errand. Most people put this way will be glad to help, and they will be honored by our confidence. And then it tells us how to proceed from there. I pocket my pride and go to it, illuminating every distant character, every dark thing in the past. And once I have taken this, there will be nothing. I lack it. I can now look the world in the eye. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. My fears fall body. I began to feel the nearness of my Creator. I may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And the belief will never serve us until the belief becomes an experience that we are continuing daily basis in our lives. Okay. A long, long time ago, in AA, not only did the best in this book, but individual members of Alcoholics Anonymous recommended to each other that they search out a surgeon, an attorney, a doctor. Now, they didn't link the person they admired this habit to these three categories of professional men at all. It was a recommendation. And the recommendation was based on the fact that each of these people had ministers as part of the vows that they took in their children, as professional men, to respect a prophetess. Okay? Now, that was a group of people that it's possible to take the separate, not only do the best of, might be that you had to take this habit, were a group of people who said, and each of them said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And old Joe had, after 2 painful years, he might have gotten 62 days still right. And Irene, the very best she had accomplished in 4 years, but never had. And they were all doing the very best they had could with what they had to do at that time. And each of them had been known to be black enough when they were ready. And it's hard to limit the people that you felt all the confidence in about sharing your inmost thoughts that had to do with the hypocrite. And that's the reason that a long time ago, that a lot of the hypocrites that have said, particularly with professional people, who are so more than sworn secrecy, have to do with confidence. Okay. One of the problems that the members of Alcoholics Anonymous experienced at that time was trying to take a fish step and then to with absolutely no knowledge of what they were trying to do or why they did it. And I know there are a few people who remember this. A suggestion needs to be made to a member of AA.
It's not a human experience. It's a spiritual experience. And go into it with that attitude rather than bringing, you know, this is a terrible thing. Go into it with the attitude, I'm going to have a spiritual experience. Because I'm going to experience God. And also, God is going to experience me. God is going to have a human experience or a ordinary experience, you know. And you're going to have God experience. And to know this, and to set aside a time, and all these things I'm telling you are from experience. If a person, comes, you set aside a time and don't be rushed. You need time when it's over to let it sit inside of you and let God's healing touch. And don't go rushing off to be a husband or bring somebody with you for a dinner engagement and you rush all over the place. Just take the day and take the time. You get it, you know. It is really necessary to, I have sex with every member of the walk around and fishing in there, cleaning, and down there late night, you know, in an hour or two. And one night, I just said, look, you just go handle it right now. We cannot go on. You're wasting your time and mine, God, unless you are willing to take the time that's necessary. That is not very important.
This there is the first indicator that our drinking problem has been removed. I quote, the feeling that the main problem has disappeared will often come stronger. And later on, we're told it will completely disappear. Well, we've got one or two other things to do before it completely disappears. But now, at this point, step 125, you are made aware consciously, I've got time for that thing in 5 days, you know, or here is room, and have you thought about it. And between this step and next step, there is subtle difference discovered between the act of thinking about drinking and the act of thinking about not drinking. When I first started not drinking, my own being was consumed with my pussy. And I thought of ways to avoid taking the drink. I thought of ways to avoid situations. And I was just talking about it all night. And that's what I did think about it in reverse. And the right way to not drink is to not think about it on any level. And be effective about it in discussion with other people. We're told that we need to regret the past and always shut the door. So if I talk to you about a previous experience of drink with drinking, I'm objective about it in whatever it is that I bring up. Hopefully, we'll help you, but it may have some relationship to me.
I think I would like to talk about the procedure, because I think it's important with this step. Because I learned this part, and the reason I learned this is because I had a woman by me, and Bill Brooks said, and she left, and I knew she had my help. She had another, you know, honest and very first step, and she looked at all the situations, and her time had been changed on and everything, but I was my advocate to help her, pull out for her the things that needed to be pulled out. So I'd like to talk about how to help another person with this step. I went to the church lesson hall, and two or three things I would do. One is start with prayer. And this, I know, is establishing the consciousness that you need. You don't need your consciousness, you need God's consciousness. You better be plugged in that hour. And you might as well not even do it. So, start with prayer, and more than going through the first 4 steps of the program. And ask the person, you know, to be the one doing it, and after you do the prayer, with using faith for the first step, then ask them to say something that they would like to do. Some do, some don't. Also, something that she did, she has a challenge, and I always do that, and to speak to her. And also, to keep her open and honest and free judgment. And the person listening needs this. If you cannot say, free judgment, go ahead and lose your steps. Anybody that's coming needs to feel safe with you. And if you are not free judgment, they can't go safe with you, and so they can't help them. Also, I told you, always ask that God reveals you anything that is unhuman. And then whenever you start, whether they have written down or not, anything that comes to them, start talking about that. And we had been asking God to help us. We turned it over to him, and he had been helping us in writing the inventory, and he's going to keep on going. During the 5th step. So this is living our channel open for more help from God that maybe for some reason we have not been able to see, and something can come through
If you haven't written down, it's happened time and time again. Basically, listen to that. So always do that. That's just the same words. Always do. Then the next thing after you start the prayer is the consciousness. Well, before that, I have them feel at ease, and I read the same, like telling all the life story, and on the next page, a bit of a prayer says, we are finally look to illuminate every twist character and every dark brain device. And I stop there, and the rest of that, that Bob has read, on page 75, and it promises that it says that he checked out when we finish with the step to see. Is this what he feels? And don't feel that way, we've got some things we're doing to do. And, but the main thing is, I want to feel comfortable, and sometimes they're very uptight, sometimes they're not, depending on how long they're in and how bad things are or anything they can tell. So I don't know. And what that is, that whatever they have done that I've done too, or something about that, they're not unique and different individuals, and it doesn't matter what they've done. That doesn't have anything to do with my caring or loving them. I also told them what I used to feel as a child. I figured about people that I grew up here, and I was down here, and I was looking up to them. I never could, and I never felt for them because they were so far above me. I felt cut off from them, and I thought about how I used to feel about that. Just, you know, I couldn't get them out of hell because they were, you know, fair. And I, so I couldn't be out of my fault. I found out that I had never listened to a footstep from anybody that I love more, and we have a closer relationship, and I always love that. It doesn't matter what you say or what you've done. It's my love for you is nothing to do. And people need to have that assurance before they can leave with us and not hold something back.
But I believe, when you listen to a footstep, you've got a sharing experience. And as a member of college numbers, I experienced the same other than as a guy that I'm listening to. And I would tell him about some odd things, particularly on the same level, because he was raised me. And this brought some ease. One other thing, to put people at their ease, college numbers, as I remember it, that this was probably the single most therapeutic thing that I've ever experienced in my life. And from the earliest recorded history, and written history, people have been confessing their faults to each other. In Catholicism, the closest thing we have to fix there is in Catholicism, and it goes to priestly confession. Okay? I've got where it is in the Bible. We use the Bible to illustrate. Correct. Christ said, confess your faults one to the other and be healed. And that is identical with the process that we experience when we have a precept and when we hear a precept. If you don't learn it work and learn it works, something is a precept because they are not. And it's not a one-way street. It's a sharing experience. And with the people we share with others, it would be sad to be an easy experience in doing something that is totally against their nature. And we need to learn the wisdom of putting people at their ease so that they can get into things that we've done.
It is definitely a healing spiritual experience, and the Lord has planted that in my mind. In fact, I keep calling sometimes about going, start thinking, talking about spiritual experience, and get excited and turned on about what happened to you, because it is a life-changing thing, and it's very vivid. And in the prayer, you say, and the talk you have before you start, you can establish this. And then, they are amazed that they're not scared anymore, and they feel okay, and they're really dark. And sometimes it takes a long time, another time, for them to be really ready to start. And I always will, always share my own experiences with them, to put them at ease, and they'll know that I understand because I've been there too. And I always tell things that fit their situation. So if you have a close bond with a person, that is a lasting bond, that really has been broken. I say people that maybe I haven't seen in a year or two, and we put our arms around each other and love each other, even though I haven't seen them, they did it with me. So you're really opening, when you open your inside up and let another person see, and both of you are doing this, it's a single street.
You know, this is probably different than you think, but let me give you an illustration. If Bob had started step one, and the very best he could do would be for Ann to keep fishing for me, now that's NAA and her older steps in the US and so on. But he does a good job, and he takes his fifth step with me. And now B is about ready to take his fifth step. You know who I think the best person for doing that fifth step with it? Not me, Bob. Bob is caught up, truly caught up in a living experience on a right level basis, okay? And whatever it is I know about listening to the fifth step, you take your fifth step. It really, in a fine degree, is closer to you than it is to me. And you are a wonderful person that today takes his fifth step. So you don't really need to continue to go back to the whole matter in AA. You don't take your fifth step. Look around and find out. You always want to ask a question. You should ask. And you listen. If someone who has done these things and who taken that fifth step, if you're looking for someone to take their fifth step, by your guidance, in many cases, you will be led by a guy who is very safe and harder. And you'll find that they're going home, right? You know, they really are. And they're with. And they remember it's what they've done. It's so fresh on their mind. And they will have a world of valuable information for you to see now.
Yes.
And all the time, there might be something better for me that you will do.
Don't be learning
about
anything
that I go to
man love in the world and hold myself
to him and take change. Right, this is good. This is good. And this is good. So, who ain't this ever? Say who you least like to know about. You know, I'm talking about all the people that you know personally that take this effort. Of all those people who you least like to know about you, and you can get the stuff added up within you to spend all that guy, You were out of website. That will be a mystery. You know, we are, you know, we all are still operating, you know, humans. And each of us have people that we just really turn us on. And, you know, our self-esteem is. We think, God, if you know that. Now, when we, as long as that barrier or that condition stands, we're not free. And the thing that is totally outstanding that comes to us as this precious gift from God, the name of this is individual and personal freedom. And with each condition or barrier that we experience, we have lessened this gift of freedom. And we will never stand totally free as long as this one condition is our life. The purpose and the goal, one of it, is to be able to live our lives in such a manner that at the end of the day, there is no living person that we mind doing anything with us. Our mother, our wives, our husband, our children, our pastor, the fellowship of our hearts loves. To live all that on, at the end of the day, you have not done one thing that you mind any other thing to be doing, and that's what I call freedom. And you know, I desire and love all other things in my life. I want to be that free. And I have not yet experienced in my spirit that type of freedom, but I've had countless hours of it in my past and in my present. And each additional hour that I share seems to serve me on more and more and more and more of that effort. And that's my true glory that I experience when I live my life. And the only method that I have ever experienced it on is in the confines of this book program. And for us, the program recovery. You know why they call it a 12-step program of recovery? It's because that's what happens to you. That's another reason that's facing things. If you want to recover from what you've been to be something else, it's just a method. And you will recover.